in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the May 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. When it comes to collegiate sports here in the United States, Duke University in North Carolina is probably best known for its men's basketball program. Hall of Fame coach Mike Krzyzewski has guided the Blue Devils of Duke to 5 national titles during his 40 years in charge. But Duke has other successful sports programs. In women's golf, the university has won 7 national championships. In women's tennis, Duke won the national title in 2009. In men's lacrosse, the Blue Devils have won 3 national championships. And in men's soccer, Duke won the 1986 national title. One big soccer fan at Duke is Laurent Dubois, a professor in the university's history department. Dubois is also the author of The Language of the Game, How to Understand Soccer. In an interview with VOA's Adam Phillips, Dubois said for both player and fan, the game is played in the mind as well as on the pitch.
On some level, soccer is a kind of grand psychology experiment, and certainly you can learn a lot about human psychology by watching soccer. Human beings are fascinated by soccer all over the world. People play soccer on beaches, just a patch of ground in a neighborhood, in a project, on rooftops in Tokyo. People sort of take any place they can to play this game.
And that's partly because people everywhere all over the world love stories, right?
Yeah, almost every soccer game is a kind of story, maybe even a kind of novel, in that all of the different stories of the players that have come together from off the pitch and come together in this very contained space. And you never know what's going to happen in a soccer game, but there's always all kinds of drama and interaction and kind of emotion involved in any particular game.
How does a soccer game story play itself out that might be different, say, from other sports?
For one thing, the clock never stops, right? So it's this kind of continuous flowing game. It's very much a collective game. The goalie is the one with the most specialized role, but other players really have a mix of roles. You know, they might be in positions, but they move in different roles. The coach or the manager has very little role during the game. And the other thing is that because it's a game where the scores are very low, most games are won by 1 point. There are also games with 0-0, lots of ties. One little tiny thing can make a huge difference, including decisions by referees that are often contested and subject to heated argument. And sometimes it's not the moment that you would expect. It's not necessarily the goal. It might be another kind of interaction or psychological moment that then, in retrospect, you can realize that sort of turned the tide of a game in a certain way.
One of the things that's so striking in your book is the incredible passion people bring to the game. What is it about soccer that really grips people so much?
Well, I think part of it is the kind of emotional spectrum that you have when you're watching a game, right? So everything from the elation of scoring a goal and the beautiful plays, but also there's a lot of frustration in soccer. There's a lot of tragedy in soccer. And so the kind of ups and downs of the emotion, again, make it really compelling as a spectacle and something that's shared all over the world.
Now, what is the relationship of the individual player to the team that's sort of unusual and produces its own unique result?
Well, I talk in the book about Jean-Paul Sartre. The philosopher has a passage in Critique of Dialectical Reason where he talks about this strange way in which rights and responsibilities on a team are kind of shared in an intriguing way, so that every play that someone makes has a kind of cascading effect on everybody else on the team, right? So every time you take responsibility for making a play with the ball, the effect is going to be, you know, one that sort of shapes everybody else's possibilities. And what you do with the possibility that someone else gives you, of course, is part of that responsibility to them. And sometimes that means sort of eclipsing their own selfish role, right? It means passing to a teammate who will be in a better position to score. Or sometimes it means, you know, doing a tactical foul and getting a yellow card so that the team is saved, even though you're kind of damaging your own situation. So those kinds of ethical choices are made all the time by players on the field.
When you mentioned yellow card, that's part of the drama too, right?
Well, the rules around soccer have been the same, very close to the same, since the early 20th century. But they have a lot of room for interpretation. And a referee constantly has to make decisions that are subjective in some ways, that have to do with what they think the intention was of somebody doing something, and lots of other cases. So the role of the referee in soccer is very fascinating psychologically.
What about the psychology of the goalie, the goalkeeper, the one who has to make sure that the ball doesn't go in?
Well, the goalkeeper is this kind of lonely figure. And I write about how Albert Camus actually was a goalie and there's a kind of loneliness to that role, partly because the goals are always their fault in a way, even though, of course, it's the rest of the team's fault too, but that's less visible. And they're also trapped in a way that most other players aren't. I mean, they can move up the field, but they tend to have to stay within the penalty box. And of course, they're different from everyone else in that they can actually use their hands, which is something that nobody else on the team can. So they have, I think, a particular space in the game that's really fascinating. And those who have chosen to play goalie and reflect on it have said some really interesting things.
Are they sort of the leader of the team?
They can be, in a sense, because they are at the root of the team. And a good goalie does project a kind of confidence that allows the team to kind of move forward. So at the same time, they're kind of invisible in certain ways. But I think they play a pivotal role in what happens in terms of the defense, of course, but also more fully when there's a confident goalie and confidence in the goalie, that changes the whole ethos of the team.
What about the forward? I always think of them as sort of being the stars. Is that true? I mean, is there kind of a pretty boy quality to the person who's heading the whole thing?
Well, the forwards or strikers are the most best paid. You know, they're the most valuable players on the market, and they are usually the iconic ones. You know, those who scored goals are the ones who are remembered. But of course, their work is really the finality, the end point of all of the work of everybody else on the team. In some ways, I think the midfield players are the ones who have to have the most skills, and probably some of the greatest players are really those who are midfielders, because they have a pivotal role in sort of how the whole game unfolds.
That's Duke University history professor Laurent Dubois, author of The Language of the Game, How to Understand Soccer. And he spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And we'll hear the final part of their conversation on Friday's show.
Sporty greetings. This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda men's national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. Athletics Kenya plans to stage several meetings starting in early August to help prepare for the Kip Keino Classic, a World Athletics Continental Tour meet set for September 26th in Nairobi. Athletics Kenya President Jackson Tuwai says if the government relaxes COVID-19 restrictions, they are likely to stage county and regional events before the nationals. He adds, if there are still challenges with flights, there are special plans to bring in top athletes from neighboring countries like Ethiopia, Eritrea, Sudan, Uganda, Tanzania, and South Africa for the Kip Keino Classic. Meanwhile, Kenya's World and Olympic steeplechase champion Consensus Kipruto says he'll be ready whenever the health situation allows resumption of sports competition. The Chinese news agency Xinhua quotes the 25-year-old Kipruto saying, "We have lost a lot this season, but I have to exploit the few competitions remaining. The Diamond League and Continental Tour meetings start in 2 months, and I need to be ready. However, I have to maintain my social distance and follow government guidelines to avoid contracting COVID-19. Another top Kenyan athlete, Eunice Sum, says she's focused on winning an Olympic medal in Japan next year. The 32-year-old Sum won the world 800 meters title 7 years ago in Moscow. She says she's been training alone near Eldoret, following a government directive to ban social gatherings. Eunice also confirmed that she plans to run in the Kip Keino Classic meet on September 26th in Nairobi.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
My Voice of America colleague, Jim Stevenson, joins us now with his latest Game Room Sports podcast, which you can hear via voanews.com. Jim topped his latest Game Room with Olympic host Japan, which is planning to begin its professional baseball season next month. Here's Jim.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Welcome to The Game Room.
Play ball. Japan's professional baseball season will begin June 19th behind closed doors. Nippon Professional Baseball Commissioner Atsushi Saito said Monday, after the season was postponed for close to 3 months because of the coronavirus pandemic. As for the situation, I was told that the Tokyo governor had also announced the steps to reopen businesses in Tokyo. It seems that it allows professional baseball to resume behind closed doors in the first phase. We would like to carry out our work with hope and with the advice from the experts in mind. Mitsuo Kaku, professor of infection control and prevention at Tohoku Medical and Pharmaceutical University, has been advising Japan's sports league chiefs. Although this is not for us to decide when to restart games, when we look at the situation at the moment, at least I can definitely say that we're getting ready to hold baseball and professional football games. However, in my proposal, I also said I would like the organizations to be very careful when holding the games. The 2020 Nippon professional baseball season had been slated to begin March 20th, before the outbreak of the virus halted major sports events across the country. Japan Professional Football League, or J-League, chairman Mitsuro Murai has also been considering ways to resume his league without spectators. Based on the advice we have received, we would like to discuss and show our direction about the resumption of the season in about a week. I think it is an option to resume the season behind closed doors. Baseball games will be the first pro sports held in Japan since the government declared a state of emergency in April. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is calling for swift development of treatments and vaccines for COVID-19 as a priority toward holding the Olympics in Tokyo next year. It is not a situation where only Japan needs to end coronavirus infections. This is the Olympics, so people around the world will be coming to Japan. Athletes from around the world need to train. In that sense, we need to gather knowledge from Japan and around the world to speedily develop treatment and vaccines. Abe spoke as the Japanese government unveiled a fresh stimulus package worth about $930 billion to provide financial support for companies hit by the coronavirus pandemic. Abe also declared an end to a coronavirus state of emergency across the nation. This year's international track and field competition is now set to begin with a Continental Tour gold event in Finland August 11th and end with a Diamond League meeting in China in October.
It's good to see that, you know, they're still planning to have some meets, and I hope that they do have those meets in August, September, October. You know, if they do end up going along with those meets, then, I mean, I definitely think I'll compete in some of those meets for sure, because I miss competing and I want to get back out there on the track.
Pole vault world record holder and 2018 European champion Armand Duplantis said he is planning his return to action in August, even though the coronavirus pandemic has had an adverse impact on his training program at Louisiana State University.
I still don't really have a place to pole vault, so that portion of the training is really messed up right now. Because the university, LSU, that I train at, it's all closed down and I can't pole vault there. And that's pretty much about the only place that I can really jump in Louisiana.
The 20-year-old Duplantis is an American-born Swede who amazingly started pole vaulting at age 3. He has an alternate plan to resume training.
I'll be going to Sweden in a couple weeks. Be going there because I think the facility that I would train at there is open and I have a place better to train and especially work on technical pole vaulting. I have a program that I'm doing right now, but it's just a little tough when you can't do the technical side of your event.
Duplantis has already broken the world record twice this year and set the new leading height of 6 meters 18 in Glasgow, Scotland back in February. He says fans are always looking to see a bit of history when he goes over the bar.
You know, anytime I am in world record shape, I'm definitely going to try to go for a world record. People like to see a world record, you know, when you're at a meet. And, you know, the people that are there watching you, they definitely want to see a world record. And I don't think they care whether it's 1 centimeter or 5 centimeters. I think the more world records, the better.
Duplantis is a leading gold medal challenger. And while he is disappointed to wait another year, he fully understands the delay.
Every day it just seemed like it was getting more and more likely that the Olympics would get postponed. And so it wasn't like one day I thought the Olympics was definitely going to be happening and then the next day it gets postponed. It was kind of more just like every day it became more and more of a possibility. So I started just becoming used to the idea of me not having Olympics this year. And, you know, it's tough. It's the biggest meet for me that I'll compete in my career. You know, it's the pinnacle of track and field, but it's a little bit bigger than sports. And I understand the decision by the IOC. I mean, they kind of had no other choice.
He and thousands of other athletes are hoping they'll be able to have their Olympic opportunity in Tokyo beginning July 23rd, 2021. Most rugby players across Australia have accepted a pay cut as the price of keeping the sport solvent in the country amid the COVID-19 shutdown. Still, some have decided to make a change. Queensland Reds captain Liam Wright says he has no hard feelings for former teammates Isaac Rada, Isaac Lucas, and Harry Hawkins after they walked out on the club amid a pandemic pay dispute.
Initially we were quite disappointed. We've had some time to digest it now. They're great mates. We spent a lot of time with them over the years, and so we were disappointed to see them go. We like having them around the locker room, but it's just something that happens. You know, everyone was entitled to make their decision throughout this pandemic, and they've made theirs, but it just reaffirms all the guys who are here really want to be here, have a lot to prove, and I'm looking forward to putting on that Queensland jersey again.
The three players refused to accept a 60% pay cut due to the loss of revenues from the coronavirus and were released from their contracts. Australian media reports that all three players are looking for moves to Japan.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. And you can check out Jim's spicy and sporty Game Room podcast anytime via voanews.com. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Mitro-Sredovic, coach of Zambia national football team Chipolo Polo and former national coach of Uganda Cranes. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. A recent Twitter poll has given soccer fans a chance to decide whether Scottish Premier League side Livingston should give their third-choice goalkeeper a new contract. And the results have provided a windfall for a children's charity. VOA's Gwen Ooten has more. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. It all started as a message on Livingston's Twitter page that read, "Quite possibly a football first, but we're giving you a chance to decide on the future of goalkeeper Gary Malley. With his contract expiring next month, we're leaving it in the hands of the fans as to whether or not we offer stretch and extension. Stay or go, you decide." And the people responded in an overwhelming vote for Malley to stay on. Afterwards, the goalkeeper told a Reuters reporter the results came as a surprise.
My private messages on my social media platforms has just been incredible. And, you know, I can't believe it's got to the scale it's at, you know. It's It's unbelievable, really.
I guess you've got to stay on now, really. You haven't got a choice. You have to stay on whether you like it or not.
Yes, I'm going to say, yeah, I'll stay on. As long as when the vote closes at 6 o'clock tonight, it's still positive, then yeah, I'll stay on. Yep. But again, just to reiterate the point, a wee bit of money went to charity. It's all been for good cause, a bit of fun. I didn't mind it. It was all in good fun.
Malley works as a full-time engineer, but got involved in football in 2016 when friend and Livingston assistant manager David Martindale asked if he would lend his talents to the Scottish club as a part-time number two goalkeeper.
So I said, yeah, I'll come in. It's a great opportunity. I'm a massive football fan, the same as everyone else. And I'm living out a boyhood dream at 33 at that point. Came in for that season, got promoted, I played a few games, done okay. I got a contract extension for the Championship, again part-time, which allowed the budget, then therefore allowed the budget to go and bring in other players, because as I said, I don't take a lot of money. We got promoted out of the Championship in the Premier League, and David, again, offered me a chance to stay and experience the Premier League, more as a third-choice goalkeeper at that point, but I took the opportunity, and I've been there ever since.
But as the coronavirus pandemic ground football calendars to a halt, Malley offered to stand down so his salary could help support a younger player. And that turned into a charitable opportunity when David Martindale joined the effort and promised to donate £1 for every vote to keep Malley on.
David says, you know, let's have a bit of fun with that. We'll put it to a Twitter poll to Livingston fans and we'll see. If they want you to stay, you'd be as well just stay and do another year. And we'll take, I said, okay, we'll have a bit of fun there then. And we'll do that. And David says, I'll put £1 per vote, expecting to get 400 or 500 votes. So some of the players then got involved in the tweets when the tweet went out and having a bit of banter, giving me a bit of stick. David gave me a bit of stick on it. And then he phoned me later that night and says, this is taking off a wee bit. He says, we're up 4,000 or 5,000 votes. And he says, I'm not going to put £1 in per vote anymore. There's no need to address that, but we'll have a look. And as you know yourself, it's gathered, it's gained arms and legs. It's 180,000 votes now. So it looks as if I'm going to stay.
In fact, more than 190,000 votes were cast by Wednesday, with over 70% voting yes for the goalkeeper to stay. Malley says the poll was a lighthearted reprieve from what has been a difficult time in the league. The Scottish Premiership recently made the decision to end the season early due to the coronavirus pandemic, a move Malley says has made the enforced lockdown even more difficult.
I take my football really seriously, and when I'm in here, I give it everything I've got, and you've got a competitive edge, you want to be playing, you want to be training, you know, that's, and you've got individual programmes to do at home, but you're not getting interaction with your teammates, you know, it's tough, it's hard, and, you know, it's well publicised how tough it can be when guys are sitting in the house. I mean, I think you must be working from home, but it's so difficult for every industry, for people not doing their day-to-day things.
Malley says in this challenging time, he's happy to have provided some cheer in raising money for charity. He plans to donate his first 2 months' pay to the John O'Byron Foundation that provides relief for sick children. And David Martindale has said he will match that amount. And that is all from me. Sonny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. The English Premier League announced that its 20 football clubs unanimously agreed to begin full contact practices. It's the next step in the EPL's plans to finish the season amid the coronavirus pandemic. In a statement, the Premier League said, and I quote, "Squads are now able to train as a group and engage in tackling while minimizing any unnecessary close contact. The players had been training in small groups while avoiding contact over the past week, and players, coaches, and team staff members are being tested for the coronavirus twice a week. Runaway leader Liverpool has 9 matches left on the schedule. Liverpool has a commanding 25-point lead over second-place Manchester City. And that wraps up the May 28th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.